examples in some ways. These animals have beliefs, desires, and emotions, learn complicated behaviors and ways of interacting with the world. Yet they lack language altogether, and so, by definition, cannot talk about their knowledge. Almost all non-human animal knowledge is, therefore, dark matter. Most people wave their hands at these fascinating phenomena, sweeping them all under the label of instincts rather than knowledge. Dogs, humans, and other animals go through an attachment period, are driven by emotions, learn tricks, learn to obey a range of commands, come to sense ownership and relationship and belonging to certain items in their environment, and so on. My 140-pound Filo Brasileiro barks when even slight changes are added to the environment. A stack of books in a strange place, cushions from the sofa piled for cleaning, a new car in the driveway, and so on. While my dog cannot tell me about this in English, through her barking and body posture, she communicates relatively well, though many of her actual feelings remain ineffable. Her dark matter, in this sense, has both communicable, via actions and barking, and ineffable components, just as human dark matter does. Erectus, like sapiens, would have learned their languages through interactions with other members of their community, especially their mothers. Still other cultural conventions include queuing. In an American store, no matter how crowded, most people will, without being instructed, form a queue in front of the cash register. In some countries, without rigorous enforcement, such queuing will not occur. Everyone will crowd around the cash register hoping to get served first. Queuing is thus a convention of some cultures, but not others. And, as with all conventions, when we experience another culture, we will always be bothered by the absence of our culture's conventions. The reason is that conventions make life easier by requiring fewer decisions, by bringing a sense of the familiar to the foreign. Societies depend on conventions to be able to function. It is likely that Erectus communities began to develop conventions. Who speaks first when two people meet? How do children get food in the presence of adults? Who is the first one to depart the village on a new journey? Philosopher Ruth Millikan claims that conventions share a range of properties, such as being able to be reproduced, the need for a precedent before something can become a convention, usefulness in organizing actions, such as forming lines at the box office instead of everyone crowding around at once. She also notes that we can all violate conventions for different reasons and effects, just as Grice observed that we can flout conversational maxims. Millikan asserts that all people want, expect, and seek conventions, such as using a bag to hold a seat in a waiting room. The discussion of the importance of conventions and the individual to culture leads to an understanding of culture as the core of cognition. The argument is that without culture, there can be no semantic understanding, no background, no tacit knowledge to undergird new thought. Erectus societies had culture. From the very first, humans, with their larger brains and new experiences, built up values, knowledge, and social roles that allowed them to wander the earth, sail the seas, and build the first communities in the history of Earth. And from these cultures, built more than 60,000 generations ago, we emerged. Our debt to Homo erectus is inestimable. They were not cavemen. They were men, women, and children, the first humans to speak and to live in culturally linked communities. Conclusion. That is why it was called Babel, because there the Lord confused the language of the whole world. From there the Lord scattered them over the face of the whole earth. Genesis, chapter 11, verse 9. More than 60,000 generations ago, Homo erectus introduced language into the world. Not merely another form of animal communication, language is an advanced form of cultural expression based on abilities unique to human cognition along with general principles of structure for information transfer. The core of language is the symbol, a combination of a culturally agreed-upon form with a culturally developed meaning. Human perceptual constraints and thinking limitations guide this process, but it is largely the output of human societies, their values, their knowledge, and their social structures. The symbol may have resulted from associating two objects by mistake, such as a tree root confused with a serpent, or simply by regular association of one thing in the world with another object or event, as Pavlov's dog learned to associate food with the ringing of a bell. Once this connection was made, humans began to use their symbols, each one learning from the other. Since communication is an effort of the entire being, gestures, intonation, the lungs, the mouth, the tongue, the hands, body movements, and even eyebrows were marshaled for use in language, just as they are in much other animal communication. These different components of our communicative effort in language would have broken symbols down into smaller and smaller parts, as they also were used to build them into larger and larger units. Speech sounds, words, sentences, grammatical affixes, and tones all emerged from the initial invention of the symbol, with the invention being improved and spreading over time by total societal involvement, just as all other inventions are. Meaningless elements, sounds like s, a, and t, were combined to form meaningful items, such as the word sat. And duality of patterning emerged, itself leading next to three types of grammar. The first kind of grammar, G1, is little more than symbols arranged in rows like beads on a string. Eat food, man, woman, or even I see you, you see me. The next language type, G2, arranges symbols linearly, in a row, just like a G1 grammar, and hierarchically, combining symbols inside of other symbols, just as many modern European languages do. The third type of grammar, G3, does everything that the other types do, but with the added property of recursion, the ability to put one thing inside another thing of the same type without end. Language as a Matryoshka doll. All three types of languages are still found in the world. All are fully functioning human languages appropriate for different cultural niches. Homo erectus communities spoke one or all of these types of grammars in their far-flung outposts around the world. Human languages change over time, and cultures and speakers elaborate them in some places and simplify them in others. Contemporary languages are therefore different in their details from those of 2 million years ago. But the fact remains that 2 million years ago in Africa, a Homo erectus community began to share information among its members by means of language. They were the first to say, "It's over there," or, "I am hungry." Maybe the first to say, "I love you." Erectus communities were unlike sapiens communities in many ways, but they were nevertheless societies of human beings discussing, deliberating, debating, and denouncing as they traveled the world and bequeathed to us their invention, language. Each human alive enjoys their grammar and society because of the work, the discoveries, and the intelligence of Homo erectus. Natural selection took those things that were most effective for human survival and improved the species. Until today, humans live in the age of innovation, the era of culture, in the kingdom of speech. This concludes How Language Began by Daniel L. Everett, narrated by Jonathan Yen, a member of SAG-AFTRA. Copyright 2017 by Daniel Everett. This unabridged audiobook is published by arrangement with Daniel L. Everett, care of Brockman, Incorporated, and was produced in the year 2018 by Tantor Media, Incorporated, a division of Recorded Books, which holds the copyright thereto. Please visit Tantor.com for more information on our growing library of unabridged audiobooks.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.